I'm Ted Baker in the studios of WEOS and WHWS at the Scandling Center here at Hobart and William Smith, and this is the Hobart Football Podcast. Honest to God, the truth this time, episode 51. I've been messing this up for weeks. This is episode 51, and we're looking back at Ithaca and ahead to RPI with the head coach of the Statesman, Kevin DeWall. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Third downs. What the heck? I mean, sometimes I know it's the yardage you have to go. If you're always facing third and 10, it's hard, but it's just been a real struggle to convert on third. And anything you can do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of things, Ted. There's it's the ability for us to execute the things that are called. It's our ability to try to eliminate or reduce the amount of negative plays that we're having that has put us in some of those third and longs. On Saturday in particular, like some of those calls when Aiden was out with the injury and some of the quarterback movement we did, where some of those calls were to give us fourth down. So like, you know, we converted, I think four fourth down. So like, I know it's a number. I know it's a percentage. It does come back to what we talked about last week. First and second down efficiency usually is the case. We didn't run the ball as well as I would have hoped in terms of yards per carry over the course of that game. That put us in some situations where, and again, uncharacteristically, we took some negative yardage in some of those runs. So like what would have been third and shorts now become third and mediums or third and longs. And, you know, so there's a lot of different things. We're looking at it. Obviously, we had moved the ball. We had enough possession time. We just didn't execute as well as we needed to offensively. And that's more than just third down, but that's a huge part of it as well.
When you talk about the running game, the offensive line is still injury plagued. You're still banged up, but it's been a little more consistent the last couple of weeks. You've been able to have pretty much the same five out there most of the time.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks in particular. So the Utica game in Ithaca, I think our offensive line, for the most part, was the same people. And again, some of them guys are playing banged up, but that's the case with football. So I think it was a combination of their defensive front was, I thought, their strength of their defensive line with a couple of good linebackers. And that's where we knew going in it was going to be a good challenge for us to run the ball. But at the same time, I thought we left some things out there. And I think we covered them up. We protected pretty well from a protection standpoint. But, running it was a little bit harder. We got some things to the perimeter. But I did think that the run game was going to be a little bit more fruitful for us in that game.
We were expecting Jeremy Weiss to start at quarterback. Conrath started, was fantastic, throwing bullets all over the field. Jeremy came in and threw his first career touchdown pass. True Styles played. So what's the status of the quarterback group right now?
Yeah, I thought, going in, Jeremy, after last week coming in and had another good week of practice, we had originally thought he was going to be the starter. Aiden was out with an injury, did not play against Utica, kind of worked his way back towards the tail end of the week. Thought he had played well enough and was healthy enough to earn the start. I thought he had a really efficient, and that's what we had really looked at from an offensive standpoint. I think he was 9 for 10, and his one incompletion was a miscommunication. But, where we were, and then you throw Jeremy, was 1 for 1. I think our quarterbacks were 10 for 11 at halftime. We had the one incompletion, from Jackson Rucker. But overall, I think the first series we tried to come out and we tried to run the ball. We punted the second series. We were really moving it well. We have a first down getting into the high score zone. There's a hold and then subsequently a sack that makes it third and insurmountable. We punt on that one. The next drive is the one we go down all the way through, and I think we're ready to go score in the score zone. I chose to go for the 7 points instead of the three. Came down to the discretion of a marking of the football. I think we had the first down, but it came up short according to the way they spotted it. And then the next series, we got our touchdown. So only four possessions in the first half. And like I said, I really thought we moved the ball pretty well on three out of those four. It just ultimately, we got to do better. I think it was 21 minutes time of possession. We were efficient with the quarterback. All that being said and done, we only had 7 points. And four possessions, it's not the end of the world, but I think that's the type of game if we could have given our defense a lead, maybe they're not as heavy to run the ball on their end. There's a lot of different reasons why we didn't score, but ultimately we have to do better in those situations to put a lead on the board. And that's where we've been struggling offensively this first couple of games is like we've had the ability, we've had decent field position, we've moved the ball at times, but then sometimes in that high score zone, I feel like we've had a holding penalty or something that's taken us out of scoring range in almost every single game or taken a little, literally, either a big play or a touchdown off the board. And unfortunately, we did that again on Saturday. So it's cleaning up the things we can control. You know, obviously, some things are discretionary calls based on the officials, like spotting the football and whatnot. We can't control that. But I think we showed the guys off of video that, you know, if there's 11 guys on the field at a time and everybody has one my bad play, that's 11 plays that, you know, ultimately we can't do that. And that's how we've been playing, unfortunately, through the first four games. And, you know, it's been a little bit cleaner, and I thought we played a cleaner version on Saturday against a pretty solid defense. Like, that's going to be one of the better defenses I think we face. That being said, we left plays out there, points out there that should have given our team a lead, as opposed to just being, you know, tied there for a while. And then ultimately that whole second half was just trying to, you know, play, you know, that next possession to take the lead, and we never got it in the end zone.
You mentioned Jackson Rucker, high school quarterback. I mean, that ball might have been just a teeny bit underthrown, but that DB made a fantastic play, just leaping, reaching back with one hand to break it up.
Yeah, good play. I think Jackson will admit it. We missed that one. We had executed all week long in practice. We got the look we wanted to. That would have been a guaranteed 7 points, and we left it out there. So, you know, I trust Jackson, put him in that role. You know, we moved him to receiver. He's playing some receiver and doing some good job, doing some good things out there now. But there's no doubt he wants that throw back. He left it short, and we talked about it when he's open. Put it over the top, and we have 7 points there.
You ran a wildcat look at one point with E.J. Taylor. And we talked about when you were an offensive coordinator, you were known for what Coach Muff used to call trickeration. You haven't done it as much and really very much at all as a head coach. Is that just something that you feel when the time is right to pull something out of the back page of the playbook?
Well, what you just said, if Jackson Rucker completes that pass, you're saying it's a great call. We're not executing well enough. So, you know, the last couple of years when our defense has been stronger, it's amazing when we're really good up front. When Coach Muff was talking about all those teams, we could do simple things and they were working. The more you put on the plate, then you have to be able to go out and execute. And with our guys, that's a lot of time on task. So to me, it's a cost analysis, risk assessment in terms of how much time can we invest in a set, you know, set piece or a chunk play. And we'll carry them every single game. But frankly, like, we have to look good Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, practice them for me to be confident that they're going to work on a Saturday. And then the other part is, like, when we're in those moments, our guys have to go out and execute it. And, frankly, like that, I thought that was the right time to use that play with Jackson. It was open. We didn't execute it. And if you execute it, then you're like, well, Coach DeWall, that's a great call on trickeration. So it ultimately comes back to a mix of what you said. I don't think I'm any different as a head coach calling it, other than I'm looking at always big picture of, you know, Coach Craig, our defense was so strong. You know, I could take those chances years ago because we had leads. We were doing things. We were more secure up front. Like, not nothing against the players we had, but like, when you can protect better, you can do some of those things. And, you know, obviously with the work of progress, lately I've been trying to prevent the negative play, because that's this year, and even last year, we were trying to prevent the negative play, and that gave us a chance to win the conference like we did. So I'm not a offensive coordinator that's just some guys is all about fascinated with yards and points. At the end of the day, you can have all the yards and points you want. If you lose, you still lose. I'm all about in the business of how do I help our team win. And if it means we got to score 50, we'll score 50. If it means we got to have it for 40 minutes time of possession, and we'll do that. If it means we got to keep our defense fresh, like, we sit down as a staff and talk about how do we have to win each week and what's the right game plan. And if we need to adjust in the flow of the game, we will. But, you know, I think the ego aside, we want to do whatever we can. And if it means we win a 14-13 game, which what should have happened on Saturday, it's a win, it's a win. If it means we got to score 48 and the other team scores 47, like, right now we're trying to complement what our defense is able to do and what our special teams are able to do. And frankly, I think we very well could be 4-0. And it comes down to our execution more so than maybe the, you know, every now and then. I think every coordinator is always going to say, like, did I call every single play perfectly? There's a couple calls I would have wanted different on Saturday. But as we watch it with our guys, we're calling things that we think they can execute, that they've been able to do throughout the week. We're trying to instill confidence while still building and growing and developing for the big picture of the season. And at the end of the day, like I said, I tried calling things for Jeremy and True that we did for Aiden, you know, trying to make it as interchangeable as possible. And, you know, same thing when we rotate O-linemen and rotate tight ends, rotate receivers, rotate running backs. We try to be as consistent as possible while still knowing certain guys might have certain skill sets that we try to, you know, magnify if we can.
Marcus Peterson's leading the team in catches. He's become a real deep threat. How do you get Johnny Harding more involved? He's on about half his pace of last year as far as catches.
Yeah, I think what happens is right now he's a focal part for other defenses. Honestly, looking back at it, two games in particular. I think the Brockport game and the Ithaca game, he should have been our main target. Like Brockport, there was a handful of either callback catches or drops or different throws that were called. He's been in the scheme of targeting as one of our primary reads. You know, sometimes it's the execution of getting the ball to him. But, yeah, as a play caller, he's a guy that I want to get the ball to. And in different ways, certain teams have been playing more inside out. And with him in the slot, they've been able to, like, kind of bracket or double team him there. And that's why some of the throws are going more to the outside. But, yeah, we moved him around. I thought coming out of that game he should have had at least 8 or 9 touches. And just for various reasons, either the throws, calls, protections, you know, one of his completions gets called back. There's been a handful of those because his numbers, target-wise, he's been about the same as Marcus. Marcus has just been getting more solo coverage where Johnny's getting more 2 or 3 guys around him.
Defensively, they didn't break really any long runs. The quarterback, Parker, had 1 17-yard scramble. But what they were able to do with that 303 average line was just pound away. I mean, their running back, Scully, 98 yards, 25 carries. His long was 9, but they were pretty much guaranteed 3 or 4 anytime they needed it just on the line push.
Yeah, that's what they did well. You know, usually a team like that does that, at some point you can get them to take a negative play. I mean, there was no holdings. I mean, well, I guess to take it back. One, like they didn't have many things that went against them. And, you know, their third downs were third and shorts, and or third and mediums when they were able to execute. And honestly, our defense played really well, other than like 1 or 2 plays where we had maybe some poor eyes. And that's the ironic part is, like, you know, on either side of the ball, you get 65 plays, 70 plays, and you could be really good for 62, 63 of them. What that game came down to is 1 or 2 plays. You know, they got a stop on actually a couple of our fourth downs in the score zone. And we didn't, and then there was 1 or 2 throws that, you know, we drop. You know, Marcus has a touchdown, drops it. We take the lead right there, and all of a sudden they make that catch on the other side. So it's not one player or one play, but in a game that close, every play, you know, has substantial impact in terms of what it can be. And especially as the game went on, they made a couple plays in the second half that we didn't. And, you know, again, our job is to try to put our guys in the right positions. I thought we did. We just didn't finish the plays off to finish that game the way we wanted.
One of the things that you did that we haven't seen too much is go with 4 down defensive linemen. Or is that something you might see? Now, RPI doesn't have the big, huge line, but against some of these big, huge lines, do you think you might do that more often?
Yeah, we've done it the last couple of games. I think it's a combination of we were dinged up at D-line. We're hopefully trending to get healthier there now. So that helps that we have a couple guys back. The other part is now our linebacker group is pretty dinged up. So it's a matter of assessing our own personnel and seeing what we can do and, you know, different teams, different things. But, yeah, heavy run teams having an extra D-lineman out there helps. You know, but I think that was a testament of both, like, the size of Ithaca's O-line, what they were trying to do as the game went on. They were obviously intent to try to run the ball there. And just to try to keep our personnel as fresh and as healthy as possible.
All right, won't dwell on it, but I got to mention it. Pass interference, one that looked like pretty good coverage by Corey Rock, the one on them that was picked up. I'm trying not to look through my Hobart-colored glasses, but that just looked like textbook pass interference. Did you get any explanation on why they picked that up?
Nope, no decision, no communication on it. And obviously then I, as a play caller, I'm on the fourth down play, which we ultimately converted. But, like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's the things we can control. There were some things that were out of our control on Saturday that didn't go in our favor. There was a really questionable spot on the one that we would go down and score on. Corey has pretty good coverage. That's a 50-50 ball. He's playing the ball. He's getting his eyes around. He's doing – and then on the other one, 100%, there was contact, they throw the flag, there's no communication on why they picked that flag up. So it is what it is, you know, and I try to have our guys not focus on that, but at the end of the day, that's where I say we've had some bounces and calls not go our way, and I believe we create our own luck with just the way we work and the mindset of moving on. But at the end of the day, that one in particular, you know, Corey gives them, it's a 3rd and goal. Now they go back to last year. What are they going to go for it? Are they going to kick a field goal? Now it's easy to call plays when it's 1st and goal at the 1. And then the other one, like I said, that was a crucial 3rd. It was 3rd and 5. I mean, that was the official right in front calls the flag. She was overruled by someone else. I don't know who. I haven't got that that answer on it.
It looked to me, the best I could see was the official right there, because as soon as that contact was made, we all said, oh, this is easy, and reaches for the pocket. I think it was the whoever the official is that's under the goalpost in the middle that came over and overruled it.
I could see if they said it was uncomfortable or that, but, I mean, our guy basically caught on top of it. That's, to me, textbook pass interference. They throw the flag. It's different if they didn't throw initially. They threw the flag initially, and all of a sudden it was fourth down after that. So, yeah, and in the moment, it wasn't worth, burning a timeout to try to, get an explanation. And the way they are now, everything's trying to go as fast as possible. They marked them ready for play. They want as little conversation with coaches as possible. So, we move on, and we execute the fourth down. They ultimately didn't stop us, but that would have helped getting us that much closer to score. And, I think that's what it comes down to is we can't put it in the discretion of officials, as we got burnt probably by about 14 points on Saturday by doing that. We got to do a better job making sure that it doesn't come down to those calls or anything like that.
I know that you all evaluate officials. I don't know how much communication you get, but I brought up the point. When I started doing this 15 or 20 years ago, there would be two or three pass interference flags per game. Now there's about two or three per season. Whether it was anything official or not, it looks like the emphasis is on not calling them. The same way that, we saw our first two measurements of the decade, they don't use the chains anymore. Same thing. And it's all driven by that Division I. They want to get those TV games in 3 or 3.5 hours.
Yeah, I think that, it's different from crew to crew. I haven't seen a consistency from game to game. That's the tough part is, each crew calls it differently. We're trying to teach our guys the rules. We're going to have them, play aggressive, but also be smart in that framework. And, I think at the end of the day, if it doesn't impact the play, I get it. But, that one was a very clear, impactful flag that they didn't call. I take that back. They did call it. For some reason, it was overruled, and I don't see the merit on why it was overruled.
You mentioned a female side judge, Erin Glover. Is that a first, or is that new? Because we don't usually get the names until the box score comes out after the game, but we just happened to notice. I think it was my son Caleb pointed out, or maybe it was Dave Gage said, hey, there's a woman official.
Yeah, she is, to my knowledge, that was the first time we've had her. She was from Georgia, flew up, and it was actually new to that crew. A lot of times the crew works together.
Right, right.
So she was, and great for her that she's coming up and getting experience and doing things. Like I said, I don't know. I'm not saying it was her call or anyone else's call. She originally threw the flag but was overruled by someone. Again, I'm not in the business of trying to question other people's jobs. I just know that at the end of the day, if that's a call that affects maybe the outcome of that game, I think you got to make that call. But, we've had other female officials. I think it's great, obviously for women in sport to be able to get in those roles. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter male, female, if you're old, young, whatever it is, as long as they're consistent and do a good job, and I'm all in favor of it.
Every football game's a lesson. What lesson did you learn from Ithaca, and what lessons have you learned now after four games?
Yeah, I think we've tried to really build the mindset of our guys in terms of how to compete. And it goes back to the result is the result. And I told our guys, don't feel sorry. I can tell you RPI or no one else in our league is going to feel sorry for us. The reality is we have not played as clean of a game as I would have wanted. And, and that comes down to a couple special teams plays, a couple defense plays. And, again, I think our guys are playing hard. I think they're playing with grit. I know that they're going to fight for 60 minutes in terms of just, always competing. But we have to be cleaner to beat teams. And, again, we've had injuries. We've had youth. We've had a whole lot of things. Those are excuses that I won't let our guys use. At the end of the day, we've put ourselves able to win every game we've played. And we've come up a little short, but I think it's more about what we could have done versus, trying to put it in the hands of the other team to make mistakes or put it in the hands of the officials or anything like that. Let's control what we can control, and that was the message right now. We're going to have some starters out this week. We're going to have new guys stepping up. The mindset in a championship culture is you don't make excuses. You kind of own it and let's grow from it. And it really was talking about our guys about, taking a really good look at what we're putting on film. And honestly, some of those mistakes are mistakes they're making during the week. And we talk about how we can clean up how we practice, putting your mind and thoughts in the right spot so that ultimately we can execute at a higher level. And I'm just big on the mindset piece. And again, I think yesterday was a really good practice. We'll see if our guys can consistently do it. our inconsistencies has been, you know, from preseason through. So it's trying to clean up those things while still, like I said, growing a team and teaching them how to win. I think some people think just because you've won in the past, it's easy to win. It's not. The sport of football is hard. You know, as we saw, one or two plays can really sway a game, and we've seen that in every game. But the ability for our guys to learn and grow from it, I think we've made progress, and my hope is that we're going to continue to do that as we continue to put in some new guys or some guys with maybe less experience because of some injuries. We're gaining experience, and hopefully that'll play out and be in our benefit as we go through the season.
Hobart and RPI at the Boz this Saturday, 1 o'clock on 105.7 WHWS. You've had good luck with them. 4 out of the last 5 you've won. It seems like, to me, they're always a very well-balanced team. They're always pretty good in all phases of the game, and they never have any great weakness that you can really attack.
Yeah, I thought, actually, preseason-wise, when we had a poll that kind of looked at all the different teams, and you know, I'm not getting ahead of ourselves, but we had to kind of like assess every team. I think RPI this year is going to be one of the most complete teams we play, and not just this year. I think every year they are. For what they bring back with experience, you know, it seems like we've been playing a lot of experienced quarterbacks with some big O-lines. I think that's going to hold true. I know defensively they're strong, they're stout. They have a handful of guys up front that can be disruptive. And then on special teams, they typically are one of the better special teams play. Their special teams coordinator, Coach Higgins, was the head coach at Keystone. He knows us. I think he's a phenomenal coach. So they have good coordinators. They have good experience. They have a lot of things going for them. And I think, take away the one game that they lost against Utica, which Utica was a hot team, and that quarterback played really well in that game. You know, they've outplayed every team that they played minus that one Utica game. And ultimately, you see it in the record. So I think we're going to have a really talented team coming in that's probably playing their best ball, coming off of the last 2 weeks, beating a good Brockport team at their place, and then a very convincing win over a previously undefeated Rochester team. So they're playing hot ball, and we know they're going to come in pretty confident playing us. And again, what we've put on video, we got to be able to make sure we're cleaning that up if we're going to have a good outcome on Saturday.
I know in years past they used that double wing offense a lot with the two wingmen lined up just outside the tackles and a step back, and so all kinds of jet sweep action and stuff. Have they gone away from that in the last couple of years? I don't think we've seen as much of that.
Yeah, last year they used some double tight end stuff, and I think that's kind of what Ithaca was doing at times. So I think they'll see that and probably put some, they have a really dynamic tight end in number 9 who's a big, strong, explosive guy. So he's a target for them in the passing game, but he's a physical run blocker. So we expect to see him a bunch, and I imagine they'll come in with some tighter sets and try to, kind of what the last couple teams have tried to do other than Utica is try to, go super tight on us and try to run the ball, which is obviously their discretion on. And then I think they have some speed at receiver. I think they have one of the more complete running backs, a bigger back who's elusive. So I think, like I said, on offense they can run and pass. You say their line's not big. They actually are pretty big, just not quite as big as some of the lines we face. But I think it's a trend. We're not always the biggest up at the line scrimmage, and I think that'll be important to see how well we can stop the run, to try to keep it where they're not as balanced. If we can get them to the point where they can not be able to run the ball consistently, then that puts us in our favor with some of our just down in distances that are more favorable to get off the field.
They're number 1 against the run defensively in the league, and they're last against the pass. But like we said, those numbers can be a little bit deceiving because if a team's ahead all the time, then you're going to get more passing yardage. But is their pass defense something you think you can work against?
Well, I think it's interesting because obviously I love to get the balance going with our run game and our passing attack. Obviously we're trying to figure out what's going to happen at the quarterback position right now for this week. And now fortunately we have 3 guys that have gotten some game reps, but now we got to really figure out that consistency and grow our passing efficiency there. EJ's a phenomenal running back. We got to get him involved. But yeah, they're both schematically, they don't want to be run on, so they leverage it so that they're always going to have a plus one or angles. So it's kind of inviting you to throw the ball more. They do a lot with some high safeties and some movement. They have a really good a cover corner that can lock up. So I think it's got to be balanced. I think that's what we did to him last year was the ability to run it. And now EJ didn't have a lot of big runs, but he got close to that. I think he was either just under or over 100 yards last year. But we had to earn it last year, and I just think that's who they are. They you know, Brockport, who's a pretty good running team, they had more success throwing. You know, Rochester's a, you know, a team that wants to run first. They didn't have much success running. They had to do more throwing. Obviously, Utica, the team that beat them by throwing. So, like, it's a mix of how to attack them. I hope it'll be a little bit of both, and ideally that balance of both run and pass is when we're playing at our best.
I know we all know how difficult it is to win the league when you start with a loss, but you can only play them one game at a time. What have you said or will you say about the season going forward, or is it today's game, and then when that's done, we'll talk about the next one?
Well, that's honestly, that's our mindset every year. When we beat Ithaca last year for the first game, we were 1-0 in conference, and I made it very clear, guys, you didn't win the conference, you didn't lose it. Same thing before we even played that Saturday, just to try not to make that game any bigger. I mean, at the end of the day, it came down to execution. Our guys, I think, were emotionally focused. They played hard. I thought it was the right game plan in terms of what we needed to do to win it. We just didn't finish it. And, you know, I think our guys understand, like, it's, you know, they have that tiebreaker against us. But I said it's one game. Like, if they go through undefeated, then they own the tiebreaker. But if they lose and we continue to win, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen. But I said, guys, you can't predict and try to, you know, guesstimate what's going to happen in the future. Here's what we have is we got a really good RPI team that a lot of people might think is the strongest and most complete team in the conference. So, you know, at the end of the day, we'll see who's going to end up winning our conference. It's going to play itself out, but I'm big about going 1-0 every week, and I think we're going to have our hands full with a really good RPI team that we're going to have to play pretty darn well at home and make better plays, execute better, tackle better, block better, like all the things that we could have done just a little bit better on Saturday that would have secured that win. If we don't correct those things, then they're going to be magnified against a really good RPI team. But I believe in our guys, I believe in our process, and I believe in the fact that we're going to continue to improve. And regardless if there's different people stepping up, it's our job to make sure we're putting them in positions to be successful. And I think our guys understand that the focus is 100% on RPI. It's not the outcome we wanted last Saturday, but we still have a lot of season to play for. And the only thing we can control is can we finish strong and then hopefully position ourselves to be there at the end of the year winning the conference.
With the E8 games to open the season, are those going to rotate? So you played three this year. Is it going to be a different three next year?
You get a home and away, so we'll get okay. The same opponents. The way it works, you get two guaranteed, weeks two and week three. Week one, we've just happened to keep that game with Alfred. So we've played three. We will play those same three opponents next year, and then okay. It's going to rotate. So every 2 years, that way you get a home and away, and then it rotates that way. So, I think for a while there, we were playing all the Empire 8 teams, and then for whatever reason, certain teams backed out on contracts, and we got away from it. And lo and behold, we're back. I think it makes sense. But, my goal and in support of it, I think it's good for New York State football. It's good for travel. But at the same time, I want to make sure we're continuing to play really strong teams, and we did. You know, we've played a really good strength of schedule. I think when the dust settles at the end of the year, you know, we've played four of our strongest teams right out the gate. And that's why I said, I think if we can learn from these games, it should help us as we continue to grow throughout the season.
And the other thing is, there is the one extra league game this year, so there's being 0-1 isn't as bad in a 7-game league schedule as it would be in a 6. So there's still time to try to make up this ground.
Yeah, I mean, losing a league game is never easy and never good. But at the same time, whether it happened beginning and end, like, we have to still go out. We got six other opponents, you know, in terms of the conference to go play, and they're all going to be excited to play us, and we got to be excited to play them. And regardless of the record, I would be disappointed in our guys if they play or prepare any differently regardless of the record. I mean, if we're sitting here 4-0 and 1-0 in conference, we're going to prepare for RPI the same way than if, you know, obviously we're 0-1 in the conference. So, again, if we're chasing just results, that goes against everything in our DNA, everything we're trying to teach these guys. It's about the process, and I believe in it. And, you know, I think the guys understand the Hobart way, the way we're going to attack it. And, again, I think you're going to see, you know, just because of injuries and some other things, you know, different guys are going to need to step up this week. And if we've done a good job developing them and preparing them, I think they'll go out and play confidently, and let's go play hard, and let's go get a good win for homecoming weekend.
All right, another one-score game last Saturday. Not a small chance that we'll see that again this weekend. 1:00 with RPI at Boswell Field. You can find this podcast wherever you go to get podcasts, and you can find all your athletics news at hwsathletics.com. Good luck, Coach, and thanks again.
I appreciate it. Thank you.